This is Digital Story Podcast number 526, April 5th, 2016. Today's theme is aperture priority the ultimate exposure mode? I'm Derek Story. Of all the exposure modes, I think aperture priority offers the best convergence of control and convenience. I like it because it keeps my head in the composition game without killing my creativity. In fact, I'm a far more expressive photographer when using aperture priority mode. We lead off today's show with a closer look why. Practically every camera has aperture priority. The way that it works is that you set the f-stop, f2.8, f4, f5.6, 8, 11, 16, 22. Well, maybe not 22 too often, especially if you're shooting mirrorless, but I'll get to that in a bit. You set the f-stop, and then the camera sets the corresponding shutter speed. So it is a semi-automatic mode. You have some influence on the situation, and then the camera takes care of the rest. Now, I've been using aperture priority ever since it was available. So this goes back, you know, for me, to the late 1980s, when we started seeing it show up. I was shooting Contax cameras then, SLRs, and Canon, and the AE-1. And I always liked aperture priority because it really was the middle ground between letting the camera do a lot of the heavy lifting, but not all of the heavy lifting. Now, before I get into five reasons why I think this is a terrific way to shoot, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not against program mode at all. And in fact, program mode is still my default. When I'm all done and I'm ready to turn off the camera, I make sure that the white balance is on auto. I make sure that the ISO is on auto. I make sure that the exposure mode is program, and I usually put it on single frame instead of burst mode for shooting. Why do I do that? Because if something happens, you know, boom, right there, right outside the window, something happens, and I just grab my camera, hit the power switch, aim and focus and shoot, then I want to have a reasonably good opportunity to get a great exposure. And I think program mode with those settings allow me to do that. Now that is for what we used to call way back when, and some of you Digital Story veterans will recognize this phrase, that is perfect for grab shots, right? And you don't want to miss a grab shot because sometimes they're fantastic. There's nothing more frustrating than fiddling around with your camera and then missing the shot. It drives you nuts. So that's why my default setup is program mode, and I have nothing against it. The joke is, of course, P stands for professional, right? Professional mode. Okay, so that's fine. Now, when I'm out street shooting, landscape shooting, you know, riding my bike, all that kind of stuff, and I have my camera with me, and I'm looking for something interesting, once I start working, I do take it off program mode. And that's when I go to aperture priority mode. Why do I do that? Why don't I just stay in program mode? I mean, if I like it so much, why not stay there? So let's go over a few of the reasons why I make the switch. Reason number one, and this is the biggie. This is the one that everyone, you know, has a pretty good idea about. Controlling depth of field. Not every composition should have a super soft background, nor should every composition be sharp from front to back. Part of the creativity is you making those decisions. When you're doing a portrait, do you want a soft background, or do you want more of an environmental feel? When you're shooting a landscape, do you want the foreground subject to be sharp and then have it tail off, or do you want it sharp all the way to the back? These are important decisions, and setting the correct f-stop will help you record the vision that you have in your head. Okay, wide open. Let's say if you're shooting with a prime lens, that could be anywhere from 1.4 typically to 2.8 or 3.5. That usually means that the depth of field will fall off faster, so you focus right on your subject. And then the background will tend to be soft, and then whatever is in front of the subject will tend to be softer too. Now, there's a lot of factors involved with this, how big your sensor is and all that kind of stuff. But generally speaking, working off rules of thumb, which we're doing right now, that's what happens. Now, if you stop down to, you know, f5.6, f8 or so, then you have a bit of a compromise. And now, when do I use 5.6 or 8? I use it a lot for group shots. I do. Because one of the things that I learned about group shots is that even when you have them kind of lined up in a plane, there's still some depth there. And I want to have enough depth of field so that if I focus on the person in front, then the person in the second row will also be sharp. So a lot of times I'll stop down to 5.6 or 8 for group shots. And I'll tell you, having that little safety net really pays off. I have been burned by this, back in the day, especially when I was shooting weddings, and you get these large-ish group shots, and I would shoot them with the aperture too wide for various reasons, and I would have fall off by the second or sometimes, heaven forbid, third row. And it was horrible. And you don't really think about it at the time. You don't really see it if you use depth of field preview. Even on your LCD, you're not really going to see it. But you will see it on your computer screen. So the mid-level aperture settings, I use a lot for group shots. And then I'm going to talk about them again in a few moments. And then stopping down, and when I say stopping down in F11, F16, and so forth, that's when I'm really working for maximum depth of field. And I still subscribe to the rule of thumb. If I want a lot of depth of field, I stop down, let's say F16, and then I focus 1/3 in the composition. And I try to find, you know, some sort of object that's 1/3 in, you know, so, you know, the closest thing that I want in focus would be the front, and the thing furthest away that I want in focus would be the back. Try to focus 1/3 in, stop down, and put it on a tripod, quite honestly, to get that maximum depth of field. So controlling depth of field, aperture priority makes it so much easier than program mode. Now, in program mode, you can do program shift, right? And that works pretty good. And a lot of people are, you know, fairly adept at it, where you're rotating one of the dials and you're opening up the aperture, closing it down. So I would say that that is a legitimate alternative to aperture priority. The only thing about it that I don't like is that the camera may or may not reset when you're not thinking about it, or, you know, something could happen where you're not shooting at the aperture that you think you are. Whereas if you lock it down aperture priority mode, you don't have to worry about it, you know, shifting to something else if it goes to sleep and you wake it back up. So that would be the one caveat I'd say on using program shift instead of aperture priority. All right, so controlling depth of field, that's a biggie. Next one, lens performance. Many of my SLR optics are optimum right around F4, 5, 6, and 8. So those middle apertures really work great with those older lenses. But, you know, Micro Four Thirds is a little different. So Micro Four Thirds, you don't want to stop down too much, or you start to bring refraction into the game, and you have degradation of image quality. So Micro Four Thirds, I tend to shoot either wide open or just one or two stops stop down. And that's where I get the best results with my Micro Four Thirds lenses. So it's really good to learn about the optics that you have and then have that in the back of your mind. So if you have a shot where you really want to get all the image performance out of your lens and out of your camera that it has to offer, that you then set up to shoot at the optimum aperture to make that happen. Of course, going along with shooting at the perfect aperture for your lens, then you might want to stabilize your camera and do some other things too, so that all the aspects of the shoot, of the setup, you know, are contributing towards maximum image quality. I know in the SLR days, we used to do mirror lockup. We put the camera on a tripod, get everything composed, lock up the mirror, and then either use self-timer or cable release to take the shot to eliminate the vibration caused by the mirror. So I know it sounds crazy, but I'll tell you, if you're doing everything else and you do mirror lockup, you can get some amazing results out of a little old piece of 35 millimeter film, which now, of course, is full frame in the digital world and is a big deal. Funny how all that stuff works, isn't it? So, okay, so lens performance, knowing your lens and then using aperture priority to maximize image quality when you really need that. Number three, keeps you in touch with your camera. And this is a interesting thing. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, where you're shooting, you're in the zone, which I love, but you sort of drift off in terms of your camera settings. You're not really paying attention. You know, are you using exposure compensation or not? What's your aperture? What's your ISO? What's your wipeout? I mean, you know, where you just kind of check out, and because you're so immersed in the composition. And I'm not against that, believe me. I mean, sometimes we take our best shots in. It's not a bad idea either to have at least a lifeline to your camera settings. Not to the point where it ruins your creativity, but at least, you know, you're kind of used to working with them a little bit. And you kind of get used to doing both at the same time, at least on a minimum level on the camera side. Aperture priority is the perfect mode for you to stay in touch with your camera while you're shooting. So you don't have to worry about everything and, you know, where it drops you out of your creativity, but you're just, you know, you are thinking about the f-stop and you are thinking about depth of field and all that. And I've really found that in aperture priority mode, I do stay more in touch with my camera. Natural vignetting. This was more of a thing with older cameras. So some of the newer cameras, it can be less of a thing if they have in-camera lens corrections. In other words, where the camera with this little computer compensates for the deficiencies in the lens. And, you know, that's cool. Again, this is one of those things. I really like it. And for the most part, I love it. But when I'm shooting with a camera that doesn't have that, then I really want to know how my lens performs wide open. And does it have a little bit of vignetting, as they tend to do, especially the really fast lenses. 50 millimeter f1.4 lenses are notorious for having a little bit of vignetting when they're wide open, which I want. I'm not weird. There's a reason for this, because a lot of times when I'm shooting wide open, I'm doing some sort of portrait or something like that, and I really want the camera to focus, you know, right on the spectral highlight in the eye and then let everything else just kind of melt to the background. And having a little natural vignetting as part of this, I think really contributes to a look that is very appealing to my eyes anyway. If your camera doesn't do in-camera correction on all the lenses, and you do have lenses that aren't corrected in camera, read up a little bit about natural vignetting. And, you know, it's always in a lens report. And use it to your advantage. It's kind of cool. It's another one of those things that where your lens becomes more like a paintbrush. Here's my last point for aperture priority mode. Motivates you to shoot with primes. At least it does me, because, you know, once you get used to being able to go from f1.4 to f16, you have that whole range where you can do so many things. I mean, the picture is so different at f16 than it is at f1.4. And then everything in between, you know, f5.6 and 8. Once you get used to that, it's really hard, at least it is for me, to go to a f3.5 to 4.5 zoom. And I just feel like, wow, I just lost, you know, half of my options. It's a really weird feeling. So when I'm shooting in aperture priority mode, I'm really motivated to have a prime lens with me so that I have the full spectrum of creativity available while I'm shooting. And having at least one prime lens, and you know what? You can get, you've heard me say this so many times. You can probably say it right now. Like, if we were at a concert and I pointed out to the concert, you would sing the chorus. You can buy a 50 millimeter f1.8, usually for around $125. Great lens, great price. And you can do all these things that I've been talking about. You can do everything that I have been talking about, all these points, you know, everything for the last 15, 20 minutes with a $125 lens. And you know what? When you start using these techniques, you'll fall in love with that lens. You will say, wow, why did I wait so long to get a 50 millimeter f1.8 lens? Well, that's because you didn't hear this podcast, right? That's my spin on shooting in aperture priority mode. And I'll tell you, I know you guys know a lot of this stuff, but really, when we step back for a moment, like on today's show, and we think about all of the advantages, I don't know, hopefully get you a little excited to maybe go out and take some pictures tomorrow at f1.8, and then f5.6, and then f16, and then compare them. All right, on to the next story. In the news, Fujifilm releases several camera and lens firmware updates. This was covered by DP Review. In addition to the X-Pro2 firmware update that we reported on last week, Fujifilm has released a number of firmware updates for several lenses and camera bodies. The X-Pro1, the X-Pro2, the X-M1, X-E1, X-A1, and X-A2, as well as the XF 50 to 140mm f2.8 and XF 100 to 400mm f4.5 to 5.6. Changes in firmware versions vary based on model, but most camera body updates simply add support for the focus limiter function on the XF 100 to 400 f4.5 to 5.6. If you're a Fujifilm camera owner, you probably want to check out these firmware updates and see what else you get with it. But, you know, this is something that I really like about Fujifilm. This is something that I like about Olympus, too. In my mind, they are two of the companies that are best at releasing firmware updates. And another one that I think does a good job is Sigma with their lenses, since they introduced that USB connector. It keeps your cameras current, it keeps your cameras modern, and it allows them to continue to innovate, for instance, in this case, on the lens side, and then make sure that the cameras work with the innovations that they added to the new lens. So this is really cool stuff, and I tell you, I think the world of Fujifilm, and this is a big reason why. Member quotes of the week. Intelligent comments culled from the Digital Story Facebook page. In regard to last week's Facebook post, choosing to go it alone, we had some terrific comments and I wanted to share them with you now. So the post was about, for those of you that didn't see it, it was on the Nimble Photographer Journal. I think I put it up on Saturday, I believe, Saturday morning. And it told the story of me pitching the idea for the film site to my former employer, my former publisher employer, and then how it was met with, less than an enthusiastic response. But instead of just saying no, what they did was they put me to work. They said, well, you know, create this business report and show us a P&L that guarantees a profit and audit the idea, and then maybe we'll consider it. And, you know, my goal was to salvage the work that we had done, rebrand it a bit, and then, you know, hopefully move forward. I decided not to do that. I decided to pass on their offer to do a bunch of work for free and end up sharing a great idea with, people that probably didn't care about it nearly as much as I did. And I decided to go it alone. And, of course, as I've mentioned before, this site is going to launch on April 11th, soft launch. TheAnalogStory.com, companion to TheDigitalStory.com. It is a cool site. And now in hindsight, I'm really thankful that they did turn me down or that they weren't enthusiastic about it, because now this thing that I have created is really totally under my control. Anyway, so I put that on Facebook and here's what some folks wrote. Charles wrote, "Good for you, Derek. and the best of luck. Although I switched to digital about a dozen or so years ago, I spent more years as a film photographer, Kodachrome 2564 and the high-speed 200, and will happily follow the analog story. Chris added, I'm now in position to start scanning my slides. They're from back in 1981 onwards. My latest love is a 1950s Mamiya 6 folder. Film photography is far from gone. Bring it on, Big D. John kicked in, I recently had my Nikon FE2 refurbished. My first camera was an oatmeal box pinhole. I miss the smell of chemicals and the feel of working under a red-tinged light. Looking forward to seeing what you create. And finally, Andrew wrapped it all up by commenting, good luck with the new venture. My film camera collection keeps growing. Your new site is probably going to do nothing to stop that trend. I hope not. Post your thoughts on our Facebook page. Believe me, I read them. And thank you, everyone, for wishing me good luck with the analogstory.com. I'm thrilled about it and can't wait for you to see it. Editing extensions update. So there's been another raft of editing extensions recently added to the Mac App Store, something I check regularly. And if you haven't checked lately, all you have to do is enter editing extension in the search field. Now, my current count is a legitimate dozen, and I just reviewed color filters on the Digital Story, and I have to tell you, this $4.99 editing extension is worth every penny and 10 times more. It is so cool. I really, really enjoy it. And whoever wrote it really knew how to code for the OS X platform, because the performance is incredible and is doing a lot of stuff. As you mouse over all of these filters and things, it's taking your image and just changing it in real time so that you can see not a little preview box. Your whole image is rendered just as you're mousing down the list of filters. It's really crazy. And the filters are terrific. They're very smart looking filters. And you have other sliders, highlight, shadows, all that kind of stuff. And it's totally non-destructive. $4.99. It's crazy how good some of these editing extensions are. So anyway, if you're interested in this one, go over to Digital Story, take a look. And I have a link in the show notes, as I have a link for everything else that I talk about. I tell you, Photos for OS X is getting very interesting. And I don't know if I've mentioned it on the show or not, but when we get to WWDC here before long in June, I think we're going to see a major update to Photos for OS X. And then it's really going to be crazy. And then you add all these extensions that are coming in. I mean, it's a blast. It really is a lot of fun. And if you're curious about how the whole thing works, obviously I have a lynda.com training on it, a Photos for OS X essential training. You can go over there. I have a link to it in the show notes also. This is a lot of fun, kids. I'm telling you. Updates and such. In Aperture Exile, easing the change to Capture One with Derek Story. So this is the webinar I have coming up with the Capture One folks on April 13th at 9 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. I have a link to sign up. It's a free webinar, and we're really going to talk about moving from Aperture to Capture One, what I learned along the way, and I'm going to pass along everything that I know. Well, not everything that I know, but as much as I can remember during that whole process, and given the amount of time we have. If you're interested in going down that road yourself, check out this webinar. Again, it's on April 13th, and you can sign up on the Digital Story page. The Eastern Sierra reservation forms went out, and we had another couple signups this week. I'm really excited about it. That event starts on Thursday evening, October 20th, runs through Sunday, October 23rd. We're going to be based in Bridgeport off Highway 395. This is our second year there. And the first year doing fall color. And I'm super excited about it. And we're going to do all sorts of other stuff too. We'll go to Mono Lake and all that good stuff. If you're excited in that kind of fall adventure, then you can go to the Digital Story workshops page and just use the send me info form, and I'll get you on the reserve list and have you be part of the second wave. And finally, make sure that you visit our good friends over at Red River Paper for all of your inkjet supply needs. And I mean everything from quality paper, inkjet cartridges for both Canon and Epson, fine art cards, envelopes, glassine sleeves, tutorials up the whiz bang, and lots of good stuff going on there. I mean, really, you know, I've been talking a lot about analog photography and all that. If you don't want to shoot film, but you still want to have, you know, that kind of that physical experience, I'll tell you, printing out of your printer feels pretty darn close. I mean, really, I find it extremely satisfying, as you already know. And so if you want to remain digital, but you still want to have a little bit of that fine art side to the photography, get your hands on some good paper over at Red River, put it in your inkjet printer, and, you know, make something wonderful. And they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Alrighty, that's going to do it for this week. Aperture Priority. It is cool. If you haven't shot in it for a while, try it. Really, just go out for a morning, shoot in Aperture Priority mode, take a prime lens with you. Let me know what you think. Comment over on the Facebook page. I tell you, it's good stuff. Good stuff. And I hope you get some great shots. I'm working on lots of stories for next week, so make sure you come back and join me. Until then, thanks so much for being with me this week. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye now.